The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery on the occasion of Shiho Dharma transmission to his student Danica Shoan Onkali Sensei. It begins with Shoan offering her vows to the Sangha and continues with Roshi's discourse and comments from Shoan Sensei. Thanks for listening.
This has been a week of Dharma transmission for Shoan, our Shoan Sensei. And because the whole week is done just between the teacher and the successor and attendant, she wanted to have an element of bringing it into the public, into the Sangha this morning. And so we're going to take a few minutes for her to be able to offer some of this week to the Sangha.
I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one. I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its clarity. I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony. I have taken refuge in the Buddha. I have taken refuge in the Dharma. I have taken refuge in the Sangha. To Prajna Paramita, Mother of all Buddhas. O great Mother, before you I pray, bless me that I might embody the way. All six senses open and bright, heart wise and tender, suffused with your light. Body, speech, thought, awakened and kind. Great Mother, please bless me to merge with your mind. At this threshold of receiving Dharma transmission and being empowered as a teacher in this Sangha, I make the following vows. I vow to manifest and embody the teachings to the best of my ability. I vow to continue to be a student of the Dharma, deepening and polishing my understanding and developing my skillful means. I vow to uphold the moral teachings of the Buddha and the ethical guidelines of this order. I vow to strive to be a worthy successor to my teacher, whose example over these many years fills me with wonder, reverence, and a debt of gratitude. I vow to not forget that all of this, the monastery, Zen training, and my own empowerment as a teacher, comes down to realizing this one great matter for the benefit of living beings through all space and time.
Good morning, everyone. So that's the sound of a fat, sweet, ripe plum dropping. I was remembering many years ago when we had a Soto priest from Japan visiting from the Soto school and was asking Dada Roshi when he would have a successor. And Dada Roshi said, when they're ready. And he said, yes, yes, but when? And he said, when they're ready, he said, of course, I understand, but when exactly? When they're ready, he said. So it would have been nice for Shoan Sensei to offer a talk this week, but she had no time to prepare. So I'd like to say a few things and then invite her to complete the talk. And I wanted to draw from a dialogue with Moshan Liaoran, who is one of the women ancestors we chant regularly. And she was a very significant, well-known teacher in China. Dogen spoke of her very highly. He said that she was a superior disciple of her teacher, Gaowan Daoyu, and she had a vital artery. And so he praised her highly. And there was a monk, Guangzhi, Jershan, who came to her place. And he said, when he arrived, she said, "Where did you just come from?" And he said, "The mouth of the road." And she said, "Why did you come without shutting it?" And he was without words, finally. And he bowed to her as though a disciple bowing to his teacher. And then he asked her, "What is a Moshan?" Which means summit mountain. And she said, "You can't see the peak. It's hidden by clouds." And Guangzhi said, "Who is the master of Mount Mo?" And she said, "Without the form of male or female." And Guangzhi said, "Why doesn't it transform itself?" And she said, "I'm not a fox spirit. What would I change? What would you have me become?" And he bowed and asked to study with her and stayed with her for several years and then studied with Lin Ji, a very well-known master. And he later said that he got half a ladleful of the Dharma at Mount Mo and half a ladleful from Lin Ji. So she was a very significant teacher in her time. What sort of person enters the way, trains for many years, becomes a Dharma heir, takes a place in the lineage of ancestors? Moshan says, without the form of female or male, we could say trans, binary, any definitive form. And being without a defining form, that person can then appear in a multitude of forms, which is very much like the arrival of Avalokiteshvara, who appears in the form that is needed. Guangzhi couldn't see the master of Mount Mo, because as she said, it was hidden by clouds, but that doesn't mean that others couldn't see. What are the changes that happen through the course of practice? Nobody comes into Buddhist practice because they want everything to remain exactly the same in their lives. What are the changes that do occur? How does a person transform through the forge and bellows of training? What do they become? Is that the correct question? How do we understand transformation, which is a word that we use that is part right and part wrong, helps to clarify and confuses at the same time? Sensui Shōan. Shōan was the name that Dada Roshi gave her, gentle bloom. And I gave her the name Mystic Waters in her ordination. So she began many, many years ago with Dada Roshi and trained for many years. And then when he passed, started studying with me, spent time at the temple along with Gokhan Osho. And now as a fully empowered teacher, we'll begin taking formal students, giving jikai when the time is right, ordaining monastics, performing weddings, funerals, in other words, functioning as a Dharma teacher. We'll step into sharing those responsibilities with myself and the other teachers, Hojin Sensei and Hogen Sensei. And just as they have done, she will continue to strengthen and deepen and embody her own practice. As I often say, first and foremost for a teacher, in my opinion, is to be a student. It's the most important thing. It's not the only thing, but it's one of the most important things. In other words, to continue to seek the Dharma, to continue to clarify, to continue to work to harmonize inner and outer. In a way, it should be what every student does, that as we practice longer, it gets easier, actually, to encounter the Dharma, to practice well, skillfully, deeply, and to do so within each person's particular form. And at the same time, to not be defined by that form. And so we train in the way. A teacher within this order does not enter to become a teacher, to have that aspiration. They need to enter for the express purpose of meeting the Dharma and meeting themselves. And in order to do that, they meet a teacher. They begin to liberate the bodies and minds of themselves and others. If they haven't already, they begin to awaken the deep, primordial, and I think intrinsic aspiration that we all have, which is to be a benefit in the world, to do something good. And so a sincere practitioner trains for weeks and months and years and decades. It's hard to think about that at the beginning, right? It's just not what we're used to, right? I mean, many people work very hard at something that's very important to them for some specific period of time. But to enter into a path that may have a beginning but no end, what is that? And to know that in doing that, that they're going to face their mind, their petty mind, their harsh mind, their agitated bodies, karmic bodies, their insecure mind, their arrogance. They will face their past, their actions, the result of their actions, what they carry with regards to those actions. And if they're serious about the Dharma, they will do everything they can to liberate themselves from the bonds, the burden of what all of us have been carrying since the beginning. And of course, that means cultivating our faith and patience, kindness, resilience, forbearance, these wonderful qualities, profound qualities. They will learn to take responsibility. They will learn to take responsibility. If they don't, they cannot do this. We cannot do this if we don't take responsibility for our mind, for our actions, if we're not willing to be held accountable in moments when we need to be. To trust, we have to trust. And we have to trust more, and then more, and then more. Which means at the same time, we have to be trustworthy. It has to go both ways. To develop patience and at the same time have urgency. To apply great effort and at the same time know how to relax profoundly in a way that we haven't before. To see and be seen. And along the way, hopefully, to love the Dharma. And what does that mean, to love the Dharma? Love's a tricky word. But there is the love of the Bodhisattva, which is selfless. There's love of the Dharma like food and water, like air and earth, like spring flowers and autumn leaves. They have to discover what it is to take refuge. Otherwise, we can't practice Buddha Dharma. And it's a discovery. I don't think anybody comes in knowing intimately, clearly what it is to take refuge. We have to practice it, which means we have to keep practicing it and persevering and practicing it and applying that faith to things that we don't yet fully understand. We may not even understand why we're doing it, which is, you know, asking something of a person to engage in something wholeheartedly and not really understand it, right? And we all know how that could be misused or dangerous, blind. But what keeps it from being misused or blind is the mind that wants to understand, that is engaging. It's not just doing something in a blinded way, but it's actually engaging it deeply. In a sense, is uncomfortable with engaging something wholeheartedly and not fully understanding. That's okay provisionally, but not forever. And at every step, studying and forgetting the self, letting go of the self, letting go of the self, letting go of the self, and serving, learning how to serve. In the transmission, one of the things that the teacher asks is that the successor not let this Dharma light be extinguished. Please do not let this Dharma light be extinguished. And so then I would ask, what exactly is Sensui Shoan? mystic waters, gentle bloom. What sort of person is this? And how have you transformed yourself? What have you become over these many years?
I wasn't quite prepared for Dharma.
It's just a simple question. Respond in any way you like.
Good question. Good question. Up on that lofty peak. Hard to see. You can catch a glimpse. And a glimpse can shake the rafters. I was thinking about transformation and that question of what transforms. And like Roshi just said, that transformation is this kind of funny word because on the one hand, like, yeah, totally transformed, totally transformed. And on the other hand, nothing, no one to transform. I was looking at the moon early this morning, and it's just that waning crescent, so sublime. And thinking about the phases of the moon and the way the moon seems to transform. But does the moon transform? Does the moon's nature change? Our view, our sense may shift. But did the moon transform? I was thinking too about those moments where we're brought up against our ideas and how essential that is. And how sometimes uncomfortable and unsettling that is, but what an essential aspect that is of Zen training and of working with a teacher. And how that can really be a doorway, that like that relationship, a doorway into this shift, this transformation. And I had a couple of, I feel like I could honestly write a book about this. The memories kept coming. I was kind of having a, like, whoa, just as Roshi was speaking about time, that's like a lot of living. And I think for most practitioners, a long sustained practice over years is marked by a lot of struggle, actually. Because you have to hang in there and encounter your own stuff. And it's so hard to see that that's what's happening. It really, really feels like it's out there. Totally convincing. And so what does it take to like recognize? It takes a lot, actually. Part of the week of Shiho is services to the ancestors that's repeated multiple times throughout the day. And prostrations. And at one point, I was feeling like, oh my God, with each ancestor, like the life of struggle that was there in their practice, had to be. And the teacher's commitment to hanging in there with the student, so much patience, so much capacity to just like hold a space and have faith. So I was remembering when I was, I think it was when I was working on Mu, the first koan, and I worked on Mu for a number of years and struggled my heart out. And I remember at one point going into, at that time, I guess it was Daisan with Shugen, at that time, sensei, and kind of feeling at my wit's end. And I was like, I don't know. I mean, I think I had been working on Mu for several years already. And I said, I feel like I'm getting so tangled up. I feel like I just need to like start over. And he said, that's an excellent idea. And I was so taken aback in that moment because I felt like I was in a place of feeling futility of practice and, you know, kind of like tearing up the paper and throwing it out. And for him to sort of meet that with like, yes, exactly, start over, was so fresh. We can always start over. When Rebecca Lee, who's a Chan teacher, was here, she's been to the monastery to lead retreats on a few occasions. She has a phrase that she offered, you know, sort of frequently throughout the retreat, where she would say, every moment is brand new. And I kind of heard it and thought like, yeah. I've heard that before. And then after, I was talking to a retreat participant who was like, that was so helpful. They actually heard it, right? I didn't. What is it when we touch that truth? Every moment is brand new. When it's not, what's happening? And as Roshi said, like when it's not, when we're struggling, when we're bound up, can we see, like, that's us. We're the ones. So those gateways into transformation, and then those gateways where we have this sense like, wait, there's nothing to transform. It's already perfect. You're already perfect. And pretty recently, I went into Daisan with Hojin Sensei in Sesshin. And again, I was like, you know, in a little less fraught state, I think, than those many years earlier working on Mu, but a little bit of a like tangle. And I said to Hojin something like, God, you know, I wish it didn't take like so many days of Sesshin for me to like get to a deeper place. And she said, huh. And I said, well, do you have any like words of wisdom or guidance or encouragement on that? And she said, I'm just wondering about this deeper place. I'm just right here. Oh, yeah. So, practice and training. And like all that that is and like all that's happening that like we can't see, we don't know. Maybe sometimes we feel it and often maybe we don't. So we have to trust and sustain. And this week was an ordinary week, the last week of Ango for the residents here. And because I was doing the Shiho training, I was staying in silence and kind of in a personal retreat. And it was so beautiful to be here with like retreat mind and have all of you guys just like going along with your ordinary training week. And I literally was like, and I, this is an actual question that I will ask some of you later, like, was this an exceptionally strong week of training, or is this just like how it always is? Because I was like, whoa, what is happening here? We were like doing the services before like the meals, before like work, and there was just so much heart and ki and life and sincerity and the true refuge folks who were here. It was like having a group of old friends show up. Amazing. And just to feel like, oh my gosh, so like in that inner chamber, held by like the rhythm and the pulse of practice in Sangha. Practice and enlightenment are one, a foundational teaching of our school. And so as Roshi was saying, I didn't ever ordain or choose a life of practice with this as a goal or an outcome. And as we were sort of reaching the end of like the formal training curriculum and Shugen started to speak about that, I was like, I don't want it to be over. I want to train formally forever. But he has assured me that he will always be my teacher, and that my practice and study of the Dharma continues endlessly, which I very much feel. And I feel motivated to really clarify if I'm going to be offering the Dharma to others. That feels like very serious. And so when I did my novice ordination, Ikkyo gave me this painting, bright yellow, yes, with like a spray of yellow around it. And I was thinking of that. I felt moments of ambivalence and trepidation, and that was coming up for me leading up to this. And I had to have a like good talk with myself and be like, no, I choose this. I choose this, not knowing what it is, but pretty sure it's going to be a mess of trouble. And I'm sure also wonder and joy that I really can't imagine. It definitely feels like repaying the debt of gratitude to my teacher is what I can turn to in moments where I think, oh, get me out of here. So thank you. And thank you.
You know, this happens all together. It's always been like this. So in that sense, there is something new, and there is something ancient that is taking place. And so, Keizan Zenji said, just look back at your first determination of mind when you first came to the Dharma. It is hard to be as careful of the middle and the end as at the beginning. So let us start over. In starting over, you don't go back. You can't ever. That's an illusion. But you can start again. And when we really understand that, there's nothing really that is unworkable. Use kinhin. as a model. Use your breath as a model. One follows the next. That's how we climb the mountain. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.